Today, I'm going to talk about prompts. I'm going to talk about how to recognize them when they're happening, which is constantly, but we're going to talk about a few acute instances of when prompts are coming up and how to mark for yourself that you're recognizing a prompt and playing the part. Because this is the first and, of course, most critical step in the whole process, right? It's the moment when you remove yourself from one of those well-worn grooves. You step off of that path for a second to be mindful and recognize that you are in this moment and you have a choice. You have the choice to show up for yourself. You have the choice to take care of yourself. You have the choice to be there with your own experience, whatever the hell that happens to be, instead of running away from it, sprinting away from it, or grabbing something, the first thing, the first most convenient substance, food, screen, whatever, so that you can numb out and check out, right? Sheila Ray, good morning. Kathy, what's up? Pam, Julie. Hi, Julie. Oh my God, you guys. Come in, sit down. Gina. Oh, it's so good to be with you people. Can we just do this every day? Well, I guess we sort of could do it every day, although I think eventually you'd be sick of hearing my voice. So the first thing I want to do is talk about the maladaptive reactions to shame that we use to not show up for ourselves, right? That you grab for when you're feeling something unpleasant or thinking something unpleasant or something feels stressful, or even if you feel nothing at all, even if you're in sort of a flatline moment, because you want to take control of how you feel in that moment and change the channel, right? You want to add some interest and intrigue. You want to add some yumminess, crunchiness, saltiness, whatever. You want to add some new information, like scrolling through the news or whatever it is. As I've been working on Pleasure Principles 2.0, I've been thinking about those maladaptive reactions to shame. And you will be excited to learn that I have landed on a brand new acronym for us. This is an already very acronym-heavy community and course, but I find that the acronyms really help us to remember the things that we need to remember in order to go through playing the part and show up for ourselves when our inclination is to do anything but. So let's think about, what are the maladaptive reactions to shame? What are the things that you do when you're in a moment of stress or strain or boredom or anxiety or depression or fear or pick a thing? What are the things that you have historically done to change the channel in your head in that moment? We've got withdrawal, right? Withdrawing into hiding behind some other responsibility, something that you feel is easier to focus your attention on than focusing your attention on yourself and taking good care of yourself in that moment. Withdrawal can involve hiding behind work, right? Working overtime, doing other people's jobs, even though you're not being paid for it or necessarily even being given credit for doing it. Withdrawing behind the children. If you've bred like I have, you know that this is an easy one because it feels important, and it is important to show up for your kids, but there is a point at which there's a sort of a line where showing up for your kids and dedicating time and effort and energy to them crosses over into sort of above and beyond unnecessary levels, right? Where you are using your children as an excuse to not do the things that you need to do for yourself and your body and your mental health. Oh, mental health is a big one. You know what I'm saying? It's all about the mental health. So withdrawing into work, withdrawing into kids and kid-related responsibilities or commitments, like joining one too many committees at school or signing on to bake one too many trays of monkey brains for the bake sale or whatever it is. We can also withdraw into or behind care of a significant other. And this is especially true if you've got a significant other who has big needs, right? If you have a significant other who is disabled, if you have a significant other who is suffering from his or her own depression, anxiety, whatever it happens to be, right? Taking on more than is necessary in service to taking care of them to a degree that it interferes or completely makes impossible the act of taking care of you, right? So withdrawing into the care of other loved ones. You can withdraw into, you can hide behind the care of dogs and cats, lizards, snakes, gerbils, anything that is in your life about which you care and of which you have some responsibility. You can go too far. You can take it too far and make it so that you are burning up all of the mental energy, all of the emotional energy, and all of the time that you have in service to that thing. And so at the end of the day, you go, well, I didn't have any time to go for a walk. How was I supposed to go shopping for food or cook because I had to XYZ? Those of you who are codependent in nature have a serious issue often with the withdrawal maladaptive reaction to shame. And I'll say more about how prevalent shame is at the end of this. So that's withdrawal, right? Then we've got avoidance. So big, so global, so self-sabotage inducing. Avoidance is twofold, right? Either that I really feel uncomfortable and I really need to do something about this. I'm going to start doing something about it on Monday morning because that's the time that I'm setting for myself. That's the goal. That's the date. And then you wake up on Monday morning and you say, I think I was overreacting. I'm not sure that this was that bad. I'm not going to change anything because I'm fine. Everything is fine. You ever see that meme on Facebook or anywhere on social media with that dog who's sipping coffee with like a hat on and the cafe that he's in or she's in is burning to the ground behind her? And she's like, this is fine, right? I liken it to that. That is the denial portion of the avoidance reaction to shame, maladaptive reaction to shame. This is fine. It's fine. Everything's fine. And then on the flip side of that, we have what so many of us only think of when we think of self-sabotage, which is the consumption avoidance reaction to shame. Like, whether or not there's a conscious thought attached to it, you don't feel so hot, you're not feeling so great about your body, you're not feeling so great in your body, you're not feeling so great about your life choices or what's happening in this moment. And then you immediately reach for something to consume to change the channel in your head. And when I say consume, it doesn't necessarily mean eat. It can be a drink. It can be something that you smoke. It can be something that you watch. It can be something that you just, you know, the thumb just constantly going, right? Like sitting in the car and suddenly 45 minutes have passed and you don't even know where they went because you've just been scrolling on Facebook and reading random news stories and random memes and maybe getting into arguments with morons, right? Just, and suddenly that time is just gone. That's the avoidance reaction, maladaptive reaction to shame. Then we've got lashing out and lashing in. Lashing out is twofold as well. Either you don't feel so great, you're not feeling so hot, don't feel good in your body, don't feel good in this moment for whatever reason, and you think to yourself, ugh. You get on that sort of like that righteous, indignant, like, I can't believe that my parents set such a piss poor example for me. And they left me with no tools to be able to respond to this in a healthy way. And so this is my lot in life. I am stuck here and there is nothing that I can do, right? The sort of just roll over and take it victim mentality that can feel really liberating in the moment when you're thinking it, like, oh, I don't feel good and I'm kind of a mess and I and I have these problems and these struggles, and I've developed these addictions or these compulsions. And of course I did, because look at the example that was set for me. Of course I am powerless to change this, because I was not taught how to live life in a healthy way. That can feel liberating, because it takes the responsibility off of you. And that moment of peace, that moment of this is okay because I had no choice, can feel really good. However, once we become adults, there is nothing that we cannot choose to practice until we get good at it, right? I don't think any of us in here have been given a really strong and proper set of tools for how to take care of ourselves in the world. And it's okay if you didn't fly out of the womb with a perfectly outfitted toolbox of, you know, self-care and self-regard and all of that stuff. That's okay. It's okay, because as a grown-ass woman, you have every opportunity every day to do something different, to use the tools that you are given in this course, to use playing the part, to use the tips and tricks that we use for generating and maintaining motivation, right? You have the power to practice doing something else, doing something better. And the more you choose to practice, and it really is in the end just a choice, the more you choose to practice, the more ingrained these tools become, the more automatic this process becomes, and the easier it is for you to take good care of yourself no matter what's going on, right? So that's the blame portion of lashing out. The other portion of lashing out is to attack when you feel attacked, whether or not you're actually being attacked. And here's the thing about being a woman who's been given shame from an early age, is that everything feels personal, right? Everything feels like an attack. Everything feels like a judgment of you as a person. And the truth of the matter is it's not. It's almost never, right? People are doing their thing and reacting to their own stress and stimulus, often not giving one thought, one iota of a thought to you, let alone judging you. But if someone changes something that you did, right, I like to use the example of someone moving a cup on the table from where you placed it to somewhere else. And all of a sudden you feel this like panic pang of, why did you do that? Why did you, you know, what is wrong with you? And you just sort of shred the other person to ribbons, because you've had this completely disproportionate internal emotional reaction to them changing what you did or what you wanted, right? Doing something other than what you wanted. Because deep inside, you read that as a judgment of you, a negative judgment of you, lashing out. And then lashing in. Take a drink. So thirsty. The lashing in maladaptive reaction to shame is the beast, is that voice in your head that reminds you that you're never going to change, that it's never going to get better, that it doesn't matter what you do, that it doesn't matter what you say, that it doesn't matter how much you practice, that nothing that you do matters, right? That internal dialogue that is self-defeating, doom and gloom all the time, totally unproductive, and a complete and total lie, right? Think about all of the things that you have brought to fruition in your life. Think about all of the relationships that you've developed and all of the accomplishments behind you. Like, clearly you are someone who takes action and is capable of making shit happen. That is not in question. And yet, somehow, you've got this tape in your head that says that none of that can happen and that you are incapable and it's foolish for you to even think and dream and da-da-da-da. That's the lashing in maladaptive reaction to shame. So here's our new acronym. New. Here's our acronym for the maladaptive reactions to shame: withdrawal, avoidance, lashing out, lashing in, wall. And let me know if it doesn't feel like you're banging your head against the wall when you're trapped in these reactions and responses. Am I right? Like, something happens, whatever is going on in life, whatever feels hard, maybe it's work-related, maybe it's body-related, maybe it's food-related, weight-related, child-related, house-related, whatever it is. And when you react to that stuff by rushing into one of these old behaviors, it really does feel like you're banging your head against the wall. The banging the head against the wall certainly does change the channel in your head quickly and easily, right, for a little while. But what they all manage to do is leave you in more pain and discomfort, feeling less and less connected, less and less capable, less and less hopeful on the other side. Those maladaptive reactions can empower you in that second to feel different, but they all ultimately make it worse on the other side. So instead of banging your head against the wall, instead of running toward that giant brick wall, that seemingly insurmountable obstacle, right, and using that as your reaction to life and stress and stimuli and shame, instead, we practice recognizing those behaviors and the feelings and the thoughts that bring those behaviors on historically as prompts to play the part. A word about shame. Another drink. A word about shame. This is one of those things that has become clearer and clearer to me as I've practiced, especially in the context of this community in the last 5 years, is that, you know, shame is a very specific. It is the core belief that you are broken. It's the core belief that there is something fundamentally wrong with you and that nothing that you do or say or think is going to make a difference. Is going to move the needle on that, right? Because you are fundamentally worthless in this. What's fascinating about those of us who suffer from shame-based self-sabotage, and so many of the women that I've worked with, thousands of women that I've worked with at this point, is that any negative emotional reaction can and often does turn into shame. And what I mean by that is, you know, think of your last stressful moment. Maybe it was this morning. Maybe you woke up, maybe you hit snooze too many times, right? And didn't have that hour-long window or whatever it is that you feel like you need in order to really start your morning right, right? So let's say you woke up late after hitting snooze 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 or 7 times. When you finally did wake up, the first minute was not pleasant because you felt badly about having hit snooze so many times. And then you felt badly about having gone to bed too late the night before. So you sort of, you know, pop up and go in and take a totally unsatisfying shower, and you're just trying to like get the day going, and the dog needs to go out, or the kids are screaming, or you're going to be late for work, the train leaves in 20 minutes, or whatever it is, right? All of this stress is happening around you, is happening inside of you from the minute you wake up into that stressful first minute. Instead of just experiencing stress in that moment, it is pretty common that you might, or pretty expected that you might decide, oh, this is because I'm such a asshole. I can't believe I, and it doesn't matter. And all of the good things don't matter. They're just luck. That was just luck that brought me that, because look at how incapable I am of living life right, right? And so you, in your brain, shift that stress into shame, right? If you make a wrong decision about which turn to take to avoid the traffic on your way to work, right? That right there, instead of just being like disappointment, right? The emotional experience of disappointment or sadness or anger or whatever it is, you so often shift that into, I can't do anything right, you know? And so that frustration and anger, which are totally justified and reasonable, shift into shame. What's another negative reaction? Fear. You know, if you're walking down the street too late at night in a part of town you know you probably shouldn't be in alone, in an hour that you know you probably shouldn't be there alone, and you're walking down the street and suddenly you hear footsteps behind you, that fear, right? Instead of it just staying as fear in your body, instead of you just experiencing that as fear in your body, it can and often does shift into, why the hell, what is wrong with me that I would be here now? This is ridiculous, you know? So all of these, any negative emotional experience can and does get bastardized, shifted into, beaten into shame and experienced as shame in your body, right? So when I say, you know, bashing your head against the wall, when I talk about the four maladaptive reactions to shame, I want you to hear that as the four maladaptive reactions to any negative experience, because you have become so practiced at experiencing all of that stuff as shame, as evidence of some fundamental wrongness in you. Meanwhile, just as an aside, you're amazing. The women in this group, the people who are attracted to this message, you guys are the fiercest, most creative, hysterically funny, brilliant, juicy, beautiful group of human people I have ever met in my life. And I have met many, many groups of human people. The idea that you would think that there was anything wrong with you, let alone everything wrong with you, is so frustrating and so maddening and such bullshit. And I know where it comes from and I get it and I understand. You know, a lot of what's beautiful about you developed as a means to compensate for this belief that there is everything wrong with you, which is why you are so creative, which is part of why you are so brilliant, which is part of why you are so freaking funny and so generous and so capable of appreciating every beautiful thing that happens around you, right? But you need to practice the pleasure principles in order to be able to see all of those beautiful things happening around you, or else you are trapped in your head and you can't see. You can't see the freaking sunset. You can't see the cute kids skipping down the freaking street. You can't see the gorgeous light in the afternoon hitting a cup on a table. You just can't see it because you're trapped, right? And I have been trapped in that way. And I sometimes go back to that place, that prison, if I'm not practicing the principles every chance that I get throughout the day. You know, I know how it feels to live on one side of those bars and then to live on the other and be free. And that is why we're here. And that is why I'm talking. And that is why you are listening to me, is because I have been given this opportunity to share these tools with you. I know how it feels to be trapped in that blind space. And I'm just so honored to be able to help you to break free. So in the Pleasure Principles 2.0, prompts, recognizing prompts, that is the first principle. The first principle is to care enough to recognize when you are about to bang your head against that wall, when you are driving yourself toward that wall because you need to change the channel, because everything feels so uncomfortable and so unpalatable and you can't believe that you're doing this again. I think my microphone is slouching. Oh, you can see it. I didn't even realize you could see it in the frame. Sorry. I know, not classy. So principle one is about recognizing those prompts, recognizing prompts in general, so that you can take yourself off of that well-worn path, so that you can stop running toward the wall, so that you can stop banging your head against the wall if you already are, so that you can choose something better, so that you can choose something that is going to be freeing and that's going to contribute to your comfort and that's going to contribute to your sense of peace. I know that you have already heard about it, the new acronym for helping us recognize prompts as they come. It's STAY, right? STAY. The beautiful thing about that acronym is that it reminds you what you're doing that is revolutionary and different in one of those hard moments. Because your inclination is to run, because your inclination is to numb, because your inclination is to turn your back on your experience and experience something else. Turn your back on your reality in that moment and experience something else. Turn your back on what is very truly, honestly, and sensationally happening inside of you and focus on something else. Focus on a BuzzFeed article. Focus on a snack from the pastry shop. Focus on a cigarette. Focus on a glass of wine. Focus on whatever it is. Instead of turning your back on yourself in those moments, you're going to practice staying. You're going to practice being with what is happening in those moments. You're going to practice holding space for your truth in those hard moments. And it is in those hard moments that you need to show up for yourself, because that's what love is. That's what care is recognizing that you're in a moment and staying with you, being with you, holding space for you in the exact ways that others did not when you were coming up in the world, right? If you were raised by people who were distracted, mentally ill, addicted, incarcerated, or just flakes, if you were raised by people who were wrestling their own demons without any proper or adequate tools to wrestle them and just getting pummeled by their internal demons, if you were being raised in chaos, if you were being raised in a neglectful atmosphere, right? What you needed, what you always needed in those moments when your heart was breaking, in those moments when you felt alone, in those moments when you felt sad or scared, was someone to just be with you, to just stay. Instead of saying, go in the bathroom and wash your face till it doesn't look like you were crying, right? Instead of telling you to get over yourself and go play, instead of whatever reaction you were used to hearing when you were in emotional need, you needed someone to just be there with you, present with you, to just stay. And as an adult, it is up to you to do that for you. And I know if you're anything like me, one of your initial internal reactions to hearing that is like, no, I want someone else to show up for me. I can't be responsible for all of this. I need somebody else to do it, right? But the truth of the matter is, you're the only one who is with you all the time. You are the only one who really actually can show up for you and be with you. Every single time it's hard, and every single time you need it. And it doesn't take a ton of effort or energy. It's not like you need to close life down and sit quietly on a carpet and hum or chant or whatever. You just need to not run toward the wall. You just need to not bang your head against that wall. You just need to stay. To recognize that there is something going on inside of you that is unpleasant or needs attention or just needs acknowledgement. And just care enough to recognize that in the moment. Care. Principle number one, care. Stay in the pleasure principles, the acronym for recognizing prompts stands for sensation, thoughts, avoidance, reactions, and yearning, right? Just briefly on those. So sensations. I've been thinking a lot about these, about the notion of sensations, and I think that two very helpful ways to think about sensations, at least initially, are pain and propulsion. So pain being real, actual, acute physical pain, because that's a part of life. We're grown-ups. We've taken some knocks, right? Like shit has happened. And especially if you are in a body that is larger than you are comfortable with, right? If you weigh more than you are comfortable weighing and you are not 25, probably that has resulted in some pain and discomfort. And recognizing that pain or discomfort as a prompt to play the part, as an opportunity for you to stay with and be with and hold space for yourself instead of running toward the wall and running to bang your head against it, right? That is care. That is the act of caring for yourself. So acute pain. The other is propulsion, right? And I think of this as sensation. And this is very often what I'm experiencing when I recognize a sensation as a prompt to play the part, is this, like, you know, and I've talked about it many times in videos in the past, in the archive, is, you know, this pull toward, this compulsion to just throw your body on top of the monkey brains, right? That, like, magnetism, that incredible physical, like, I need it, I gotta have it, you know, that is a physical sensation. That feeling of like, it's almost like centrifugal, whatever. You know, like, that's how powerful it is. Like, you can't even believe that every single cell in your body is just, like, lit and focused on getting that thing, whatever that thing is. And then there's sort of the flip side of that, which is anti-propulsion, apropulsion, backward propulsion, I don't know. But when you think about showing up for yourself in a meaningful way, when you think about actually going to the gym, when you put it in your schedule, or when you think about actually cooking all of the nutritious food that you bought at the grocery store because you know that it's a good idea for you to cook more at home and learn how to prepare healthier, more satisfying, more nourishing meals at home. And you open the refrigerator door and there's all the beautiful ingredients for you right there. And you're like, ah, you know, like, no, I don't want to. I can't. No, I did. So these very real moments of the body being like, yes or no. That those are powerful sensations. And no matter which direction you're being thrown in or magnetized to, that is a prompt to play the part, right? That right there, there's a so juicy opportunity for you to, instead of running face first for whatever it is that your body is saying, need, or running at, you know, full steam away from a caring action because it feels foreign or it feels insincere or it feels inconvenient or it feels like more work than you care to do or it feels like whatever it is. Instead of following that feeling, just stay. Just be with, right? Just recognize that this is a prompt to play the part. I'm putting my hand here. You know how you don't know what you know until you know? You know. As I've been practicing these principles in community with you And man, I have needed to use them in every context of my life, in every possible moment, in every possible way. Because I don't learn anything simply. I only learn on my knees. I only learn in pain, right? As I have been practicing these principles around relationships, around being a mother, around being a business owner, around being a woman who is, you know, aging, heaven forfend, around being a woman who lives in a very politically charged area, around every single fucking thing in my life, I have realized that when I play the part, when I am conscious of what is going on and that there is pain or that there is a need or there is discomfort or there is anything going on inside of me that deserves my attention and I want to run toward the wall and I want to bang my head against the wall and I instead choose to just be there with my experience, to stay, to recognize it as a prompt, it has been enormously helpful for me to place a hand on my body to mark that this is happening. To mark that now I am playing the part, to mark that here I am present with myself and my truth in this moment so that I can show myself care and not hurt myself again and not neglect myself again and not pretend that this isn't happening again and not pretend that I have no power in this moment because I do again, right? I place a hand on my body. If I'm recognizing pain as an acute pain as a prompt to play the part, because it very much is a sensation in my body, I might and often do place my hand there. I've talked a few times about the knee injury that I got when I was, it was very shortly after my oldest daughter was born. I went too far, too hard, too fast in the gym. It was too much weight. It was an exercise that I had no experience with, right? It was my first time doing a new exercise. And I was like, I could do anything. I'm the master. Meanwhile, yes, professional personal trainer here who knows better. But remember, it's a professional personal trainer who only learns totally humbled on her knees with her head bowed, right? So this was my humility moment. This was perhaps the hottest teachable moment in my entire career as a personal trainer. I was doing squats, weighted squats with a barbell across my shoulders. Great exercise, fabulous exercise, wonderful exercise. Not one to be done with four times more weight than you have any business squatting the first time you do it. Went down, heard a vague popping sound, no mind, drove myself back up. Injuries still exist today, and I am, you know, super good about doing all of the exercises to help support that area and strengthen that area, but that is pain that still lingers today, 8 years later, 9 years later. When I am experiencing that pain, you know, this is another fabulous illustration of any negative sensation sort of shifting and being bastardized into evidence of my worthlessness, right? Sometimes I'll be walking down a flight of stairs and my knee will hurt. And instead of just recognizing it as an acute physical pain and something that deserves my attention, my inclination as a woman who suffers from shame-based self-sabotage is to be like, oh, you see, you fraud, you don't know, and you're worthless and all that. Right? So practicing recognizing that experience of acute physical pain as a prompt, and if I can, placing my hand on that knee, but it doesn't, I don't need to, you know, if I'm like with a group of people, I'm not going to suddenly like double over and hold my knee unless I really need to, but it's the level of pain is not that great today that I would need to do that. But I, in recognizing it as a prompt, I do place a hand somewhere on my body. I love, if I possibly can, and it's not going to get me stares, to place a hand on my heart, because so often the experiences that are juicy prompts to play the part are happening right here, are focused right here, or if not here, in my stomach, right? Or often in my lower back. But the hand does not need to go to the very place where the sensation is happening. Just the simple act of placing a hand, even if it's just on the side of your thigh, to be like, I'm here. I'm here. You're not alone. Whatever is happening in there, whatever sensation is like, ah, just to mark that, like, you are here with you. You are here with it. You are going to stay and recognize this as a moment of need, as a moment where you have the opportunity to connect with your body and what is true for you. All right, so placing a hand when you recognize the prompt to just signal that. So the sensations of pain, of propulsion, right? Now, the next thing in stay is thoughts. Very, very, very often, the sensations and the thoughts seem totally connected, right? They are obviously two separate things, but in many of our minds, perhaps in your mind, as soon as you feel something, especially if it is a big sensation, it has thoughts attached to it, right? Whatever the, if it's the pain, then it might be those shame-based thoughts like, I can't believe that I did that. I can't believe that this still hurts. I can't believe me. If it's the propulsion sensation, that like magnetism toward monkey brains, or the kicking back against, railing against the idea of going through with the caring goal that you have set for yourself in that day, then those thoughts might be, you know, gimme, or I want, or, you know, nothing else matters in this world but me ingesting that or doing that or whatever it is. Or, you know, F this, no fucking way, I am out. Whatever those thoughts are, and it may be that you recognize the thoughts better than you recognize the feeling that is attached to them. So sensations and thoughts, whichever one that you are able to be more conscious of in the moment, in whatever moment, there is your prompt to play the part. There is your opportunity to place a hand and be with whatever is happening for you in that moment. Avoidance behaviors, we all know the avoidance behaviors, right? The eating, the smoking, the drinking, the gambling, the spending money you don't have on crap you don't need, the mindless scrolling, compulsive cleaning of the kitchen. It could be whatever it is. It's those behaviors that you engage in order to change the channel in your head when you need to be just being with your experience. Because no matter how unpleasant the experience may be in that moment, it is going to shift and change whether you avoid it or not. And if you do avoid being with that experience, on the other side, you will be even more uncomfortable, in even more pain, feeling even less connected and less capable and less strong and less peaceful. But if you play the part in that moment, right, if you recognize that behavior as a prompt and stop yourself and just take a moment to hold space for what's happening for yourself, that's where power comes from. That's where peace is born. That's where you start to feel capable and get some grip on the ground underneath you, get some purchase, right? Get some footing so that you can make more caring choices moving forward each time you play the part. So sensations, thoughts, avoidance behaviors, and then finally, yearning. Perhaps it's the only emotion or specific scenario that I'll spell out in this STAY acronym, because it is so common, because it is so pervasive and so powerful, right? We want to create and recognize as many opportunities as possible to play the part. Yearning comes up a lot. That means it's a juicy prompt. That means it's going to get you lots of practice using this tool. right? So yearning is one of those opportunities to play the part, one of those beautiful, ripe chances to practice taking better care of yourself. And what does yearning look like, sound like, feel like, right? It feels like grief. It feels like disappointment. It feels like frustration. Why am I not somewhere else? Why have I not arrived at some other place? Why am I still doing this work? Why does this still feel hard? Why? Rah, 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 rah. Yearning robs you of every opportunity to appreciate. There is so much that you have already done. There is so much that you have already accomplished. There is so much in you, so much evidence inside you and around you of your capability and your strength and your creativity and your drive. But when you are in that yearning place, which so easily becomes that shame place, right? Why have I not? Well, it's because nothing that I do ever matters and nothing that I am. Blah, blah, blah. When you are in that place of grief and self-criticism and self-judgment that I associate with yearning for things to be different, for you to be different, for you to be other than who you are in this moment that you are in, you cannot be grateful. There is no gratitude there. There's no sense of connection there. There's no appreciation for all of the blessings and all of the things that you have already done. Just that you are listening to me right now is evidence of your drive and your capability and your intelligence, right? You are where you need to be in order to turn this around. If you are listening to my voice, you are learning the things that you need to learn in order to turn this around. Boom. Like right there, right here, right now. I don't want you to feel that yearning. I want you to feel the peace and the gratitude and the power that you have. And you will, as you practice playing the part, you will. That is the natural byproduct of this practice. But until you get there, I hope that you will just trust me on this and have at least a little bit of an experience of gratitude for yourself and your strengths and your capability and your incredible brilliance and the fact that you are here and you're amazing. Yearning. So when you find yourself thinking those kinds of thoughts, why am I still, how have I not? Place a hand anywhere, don't care. Keep it appropriate. You know what I'm saying? It'd be pretty funny if we all like, anyway, it's a good thing you can't see my hands. You know, place a hand somewhere on the body to signal, I see you. I feel you. I recognize that something is happening, that this is happening inside me right now, that this is a prompt to play the part, to become mindful of the fact that there is something happening inside of me that is worth of my attention. And I am going to be with myself in this moment. I am going to show up for myself in the way that the people who were responsible for raising me ought to have, but perhaps did not. I'm going to do that for me right now. And I'm going to mark it by simply placing a hand on my body. Here I am. Here you are, darling. Thank you for listening. Thank you for practicing. Thank you for showing up in the clutch and for sharing yourself and your process. Thank you for believing that this is possible because it is. Thank you for doing the work and just practicing. Just practicing. I am still just practicing. There is never going to be a moment at which any of us is not just practicing. We're just practicing together. I'm so grateful that we get to do it in community, right? Because it's super hard to practice anything really alone. Well, maybe not everything. I'll keep it suitable for work though, if you know what I'm saying. All right. I adore you. If you need me, reach out. I am here. We're in this together. I'm so grateful. I'm so grateful. All right. Bye for now.